Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, musicians, dancers, athletes, comics, you name it. Sit back, relax, and have a listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a proud production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome again to the quarantine edition of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden. Tonight's guest is John D. Hancock. He has a long and distinguished career in directing movies, television, and theater. He won an Obie in 1968 for directing A Midsummer Night's Dream and went on to work with playwright Tennessee Williams for several years. In 1970, he was nominated for an Oscar for his short film Sticky My Fingers and Fleet My Feet. He's also known for Let's Scare Jessica to Death, Bang the Drum Slowly, California Dreaming, Weeds, and most recently The Girls of Summer, which can be seen on Amazon Prime currently. He's also known for directing television shows such as The Twilight Zone 1980s incarnation and Hill Street Blues. So welcome to the show, John D. Hancock. Subscribe to Foul Players Radio for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castro, CastBox, and iHeartRadio. We'll be back with John D. Hancock right after these words. Hello, listeners. I've got some great news from one of our former guests. Barbara Bustard has just released a book called The Art of Healing, 12 Step-by-Step Meditative Art Exercises for Improved Physical, Mental, and Spiritual Well-Being. Miss Bustard bears her soul and shows us who she is through her stories and exercises. This is a book to be felt and experienced, an artist's work. Art is a way to work through all that life gives us, whether it is happy, sad, or anything in between. Art is a creative, safe, healing, and everything special place. It is the place to work through the stress that underlies all disease. In her book, The Art of Healing, 12 Step-by-Step Meditative Art Exercises for Improved Physical, Mental, and Spiritual Well-Being, Miss Buster describes the process to make healing happen. The meditative exercises in this book are described in a very simple, clearly articulated manner. They are appropriate for any level of artistic experience. Just reading this book, Miss Buster's exercises touch you at a feeling level. You are moved from your thinking analytical brain to creative expression. It is available now on Amazon for $29, and it's gotten many positive reviews from readers so far, so pick up your copy today. Her website is artforbodymindandsoul.com. Also remember, the holidays are just around the corner. We all love to support our local small businesses and artists. Make sure you get your copy today. It makes a great gift. Foul Players Radio is now a proud affiliate of the SJ Network. If you're a performer, an actor, musician, filmmaker, author, you name it, in need of a good publicist, call Steve Joyner, 816-605-4561, or you can email him at stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. He has many years of experience in the entertainment business. He's competent, confident, and takes great care of his clients. He would be the publicist for you. Call Steve at 816-605-4561 or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Chris Stalia of Breaking the Fourth Wall. If you enjoy our show, you can find it on YouTube. Just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment, or just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment on Anchor.fm, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or wherever quality podcasts can be heard. And also, you can find us on all the social medias. Just look for Realm of the Mist Entertainment, and I will catch you on the other side.
I'm Michael, the host of the semi-monthly podcast, In a City Like Yours. Join me as I chat with interesting people with interesting life stories. You can listen to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can follow us on Twitter at IACLYS Podcast, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at In a City Like Yours Podcast. Please feel free to let me know what you think. And keep coming back for the many interesting stories in a city like yours.
Hey, this is Don Smith from the Life Radio Show. If you've always wanted to learn more about the world of low-budget filmmaking and even lower-budget comedy, tune into the Life Radio Show. You can live stream the show at WWSU1069.org on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, or find us wherever you find podcasts and like and follow the Life Radio Show on Facebook for live video and other shenanigans.
Hey, what's up? This is Christopher Stolle of Realm of the Mist Entertainment. The podcast you are listening to is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com. That's s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and information on those shows, as well as information and ability to contact publicist Steve Joyner for more information. Just go to the website and check out the family. Ladies and gentlemen, until then, enjoy the show.
So, Mr. John Hancock, it's a pleasure to have you on the show this evening. Welcome. Welcome to Foul Players Radio.
Wonderful. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I was looking on Amazon the other day, and I saw that you did have some recent work up. There was a show called The Girls of, or a movie called The Girls of Summer that I watched that I saw that you had directed. So, tell us about that. When were you working on this movie?
Well, we shot it in the summer of 2018.
Oh, okay.
And edited it for almost for a year, and then it's just come out on Amazon Prime and getting good reviews. Mm-hmm. It's about a drummer in a country girls band.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a bittersweet love story.
Yeah.
With a lot of country music, a lot of songs that people like. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody who likes country music would enjoy it.
Yeah. It was a fun movie. To a certain extent, some of it almost reminded me of like some of the rock and roll musical shows that were on when I was a kid. A little bit like it escapes me right now. But regardless, there were some really fun parts in there. Showing them on the road and everything, and building a band and building their following, and interesting done. One thing I saw that I wanted to ask you about was in the credits at the end, it had mentioned something about the Harold Ramis Film School. Was this project in association with that, or was it, what was the relationship with it?
No, I teach there.
Oh, you do?
I teach at Columbia College in Chicago and also at the Harold Ramis Film School at Second City.
Oh.
And, there was an actress who was around Second City for several years named Tori Titmus.
Uh-huh.
And I saw maybe 10 or 12 things she did for my students.
Oh.
And I was just so impressed with her ability. I thought this girl's going to be a star. And I wanted to work with her. So I talked to her and said, let's do a movie together. And this is the result.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I thought she was good. She's not only... a good actress. I saw that she wrote the screenplay for it too.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is an extremely talented girl, and very, such a nice person too. I mean, she's really a wonderful girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great opportunity for somebody who's young and talented like that to have somebody mentor them and to be taught by somebody.
She felt that. I was glad.
Yeah. It was an interesting interesting, fun movie to watch, I thought. We enjoyed watching it the other night when we saw it. And a good time movie, fun to watch, something pretty much the entire family could watch too. And very good. There's a lot of people nowadays, that haven't really been able to work, but I do see, I found out that, you were able to film this before COVID and everything started, which was very fortunate,
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's really been hurting this year.
It's nice that it's being released during COVID because it's the kind of picture that people might want to watch during this period when they're, because it's positive it's not falsely positive. It's just, it has a nice feel to it though.
It really does. It really does. So great, great. So, again, I was, looking back over your bio and I was reading some articles about you and everything to kind of prepare for the show. And I see that, you did go back a good number of years with a theater background. I see that one of your first, your early recognitions that you got for your theater directing was in 1968, I believe it was. You got an Obie for A Midsummer Night's Dream. It was an off-Broadway show.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've done I think I'm proudest of. It was a very unusual production of Midsummer Night's Dream. It had sets by the pop artist Jim Dine, and it was kind of erotic and dark and extremely funny, just extremely funny. It was a very, very happy with that. I'd like to make a film out of it. I've made a screenplay out of it, and I have three things I'm trying to do now, two original things I've written and an adaptation of Midsummer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Well, tell us about them. Are you ready to the point to tell people about them, or are they still kind of developing?
No, I've got three completed screenplays that I'm trying to attach, name actors so I can get them financed.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, wonderful. Well, we can't wait to see them when they come out, and make sure that when they do come out and when they're ready to go, you come back and tell us about them, because we'd all love to hear about it. Now, I also had read, and I didn't find the names of the projects that you had done, but you had worked with Tennessee Williams on several occasions, and he spoke very highly of you. What was that like, and what were the projects, if you could tell us?
Well, it's one of the happier relationships of my life. I mean, wonderful man, brilliant man. I mean, part of it, the reason I went into the business was loving his plays, Glass Menagerie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And I was hired to co-direct a production of his play, Milk Train Doesn't Stop Her Anymore, at the Royal Court Theatre in London. Oh. And I got to know him a little bit in association with that. And then when I took over the big regional theater in San Francisco, which at that point was the Actors Workshop. Mm-hmm. Been there 14 years and was very successful. And I was the artistic director, and I opened with a production of Milk Train, and he came out and we worked together on it.
Oh, wonderful.
And got to be good friends. And then I worked with him. I tried to put together a movie. He wanted to do a screenplay about Rambo, the poet. Uh-huh. And I tried to make that happen. And then several things we worked to, working on material together.
Right.
And then I did I did two character play. Uh-huh. It's what it's called in Los Angeles. Uh-huh. And he came out and we worked together on that. And then we were going to do something for Hallmark. And I just knew him over a period of years. He was a wonderful man, but a very difficult man in that he had a tremendous attention needed. If he couldn't get attention in a good way, he would get it in other ways.
Oh boy.
We had terrible fights from time to time and just screaming matches, but all in all, it was a very rewarding, loving relationship.
Right. Well, I mean, like I said, he's one of the big dogs in American theater. I mean, I think a lot of people said he's one of the top three names of all time. To be able to, work with him, for that amount of time, and the thing is, like, even though when you get two creative people that fight, it usually something really incredible comes out of it, in a lot of cases. So, very interesting here. So
Let me give you an example of a fight.
Sure. Okay.
My partner from San Francisco, Ken Kitch, and I had produced this, his play, two character play in Los Angeles. And we were in the final dress rehearsals. Mm-hmm. And he flew out from New York with his agent and came to the theater. Mm-hmm. So loaded, that he was falling down drunk, and he was on both, I imagine, on downers and alcohol, right?
Oh boy.
And I said, Tennessee, the actors, you know, they're frightened to have you see their work, and they don't know the lines as well as they want to for the second act, so we're just going to show you the first act. Oh, that's fine, baby, that's fine, you know. Well, the actors were my wife, Dorothy Tristan, and a wonderful actor named Scott Wilson, who had played one of the two killers in Cold Blood, and he was a wonderful actor. I think he'd been nominated for, I don't know, something.
Right.
So we showed him the first act, and he had this attention-getting laugh. The playwright is in the house, you know. It was
sure.
So at the end of the first act, I said, "Okay, Ten, what do you think?" And he said, "I will denounce this with every fiber of my being." You cannot treat a writer this way. You know, it went on and on.
Right, right.
And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "You have left out the most important scene where they go to the supermarket." I said, "Tennessee, that's in the second act." "I don't care. You think you're dealing with Blanche, but you're dealing with Stanley as well." And it went on and on. And then he started to talk about my wife. He said she was Angie Dickinson on a bad night. So I went off on him. I said, "You know, we're not going to do your play. This production is canceled." Mm. And fuck you, and fuck you too, and, you know, back and forth. And he stomped out of the theater. And as he was getting in, can I swear on this show?
Sure, that's fine, that's fine.
I shouted after him, "You phony cocksucker." And he said, "I've never been called that." So, okay. So Dorothy and I, you know, the show is canceled. The show is off. So Dorothy and I go back to our house in Malibu, and the phone rings at like 2:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's his agent. And he says, "Tennessee is mortified. He realizes what he's done. Mm. And could you please go to his bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel at 8:00 tomorrow morning? He wants to apologize, and he wants to work together." So I said, "Fine." So I drove into town and went to his bungalow, and there he was in his kind of, his little silk night, bathrobe.
Sure, right.
Already writing at 8:00 in the morning, but with a cup that was like 2/3 brandy and 1/3 coffee. And, you know, "Baby, I'm so mortified." I said, "That's okay, Dan. We'll, you know, let's, I'm sorry what I said too." So I said, "You ought to, maybe you should apologize to Dorothy though when you come to rehearsal this afternoon." So he came to the theater that afternoon, and the producer's wife, my partner's wife, was also blonde like Dorothy. Mm-hmm. And she was backstage ironing costumes. And he came up to her and apologized effusively to the wrong person. Right? He was too vain to wear his glasses.
Oh, okay.
We wanted him to stick around and work on the script, right, which needed some work. Mm-hmm. So we got him a very, very attractive limo driver. Mm-hmm. And he invited him to go up to San Francisco for a weekend. Mm-hmm. And he came back, and I said, "Hey, did you have a good time? How was it?" He said, "No, the boy wouldn't put." He said they'd had some kind of suite, and the kid had locked the door between the two halves of the suite. And he said, Tennessee said, "I heard him being beaten up in there all night, and he wouldn't let me in." So this was Tennessee. Mm-hmm. During one of the previews, he and I went to the men's room together to talk about the script, and some guy was peeing next to him, and Tennessee whirled on him and said, "You try to see my dick."
Gosh.
I mean, that's both good and bad, right?
Right.
But he was a character.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it. Never a dull moment with him, huh?
No, he made sure there was never a dull moment.
That's crazy. That's really something else. Boy, I tell you, as if producing the play and everything wasn't enough, it looks like he really had to put in some work with him, too, when he was around.
Oh, he was not hard to babysit.
I'm sure.
San Francisco, he and his boyfriend would go off every night to someplace called the Toolbox.
Oh, sure, right. Interesting. So, well, I was looking through a number of your credits too. When you were beginning to get into your your film career here, I see there's a couple of names that I saw that are very common through most of the movies that you've made, and it was Barton Heyman and Marshall Efron, and they seem to be in a good number of your play or your movies going through. Especially in the 70s, even a little bit later on from that, I know, both of them, we've lost both of them. I think we lost Marshall Efron last year.
Right.
Barton Heyman, it looks like he passed away in the 90s. Were they fellas that you had known, from your theater days? Sometimes
they were both members of my acting company in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Okay.
When I moved the company to Pittsburgh, they came along and then came to New York with me. Oh. And then, we were all in New York together pretty much. And I used both of them in Midsummer Night's Dream. Hmm. And I recently used Marshall. I used Marshall 20 years. It's been 20 years. Mm-hmm. In a Piece of Eden.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And he was also in California Dreaming, and Barton was.
Yep. I saw them together, and they were also both in Bang the Drum Slowly, I believe, too.
Yeah. There's also a composer named Orville Stober that I've been working with since 1969.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh. And still, he wasn't involved in The Girls of Summer, but he was in The Looking Glass extensively before these. I've done most, 70% of the things I've done, he's been involved in.
Great. Yeah, it is good. In a lot of the projects I'm involved in, here locally, I do have, it's good when you have a good core of people that you can trust.
And you have a common vocabulary and you like each other and you could get along. Mm-hmm. There are many advantages.
Oh, it sure is. Just having people around that you trust and you like, and you know what you're going to get out of them. They're come out and do the best they can for you all the time. It's just wonderful to have and to be able to surround yourself with that. I'm fortunate in that I know that well with a lot of the projects I've done locally here, especially with my murder mystery company. Looking into, you had a film, in 1970 that came out called Sticky My Fingers, Fleet My Feet. And it looks like you were nominated for an Oscar for this.
Yeah. Oh. I got a grant from the American Film Institute to do a short.
Oh, okay.
I made a movie before and I jumped at the chance, and it's about businessmen that play touch football in Central Park. And it's extremely funny.
Oh, okay.
Was in that, and Barton was going to be in it, but he was going to play the lead in it, but he blew his knee in a production of an Arthur Copeland play down in Washington, and he was too crippled to play touch football.
Mm. Mm. It looks like you had Charles Durning in that.
Yeah. He'd been in my Pittsburgh company, too.
Is that right?
Yeah. I had worked with him in the theater. It was a bunch of actors that I'd worked with in the theater, mm-hmm. or knew from the Actors Studio, but the lead was played by the guy that wrote the New Yorker short story, Gene Williams, and he did a wonderful job. It was kind of autobiographical. He saw himself as a sticky fingered antelope, a fabulous wide receiver.
Oh, right.
And so he could really do that. Barton was athletic, but not a wide receiver.
Sure, sure. Understood. Yeah. Just thinking of Sticky Fingers, you know, not to get off topic, that reminds me of that fellow that played for the Raiders years ago, Lester Stickum Hayes. Those guys used to put glue all over their hands so they get more interceptions. And that just came to mind for some reason here. So,
Sticky Fingers.
Yep. Absolutely. And then looking from there, I had seen, you know, a good while ago and got a chance to kind of refresh my memory on it, was Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Yeah, that came out of Sticky My Fingers was kind of a calling card that got me, you know, a better agent, got me two feature jobs. One of them, the first of them was Let's Scare Jessica to Death. Mm-hmm. William Wyler's daughter, Kathy Wyler, was, I think, the development person for Joe Levine, that was a producer in New York at that time. Mm-hmm. She knew the Mosses, who owned a chain of theaters around the East Coast, including the Criterion, that was the premier house on Broadway.
Okay.
And they wanted to do a scary movie, and she recommended me for that, and I got the job.
Okay.
Then I also got... banged up slowly through Sticky. The CBS had bought the short, and they broadcast it at halftime of their Thanksgiving Day football game.
Oh.
Which, of course, is a very high-profile, you know, time to have your movie shown. Mm-hmm. And in terms of quantity of audience, and a wealthy guy in Chicago, Maurice Rosenfield, who wanted to make a movie, saw that and called me up and asked me if I wanted to do Bang the Drum Slowly with him. So both those things came out of that short.
Right. That was a fun movie to watch. I really enjoyed Bang the Drum Slowly. That must have been with Robert De Niro. That must have been right before Godfather 2, I guess.
It was simultaneous. It opened... It played in theaters next to each other with Mean Streets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah, Mean Streets was out around that time, too. Sure, with Scorsese. Right.
Next to each other. It was like a De Niro, you know, 3rd Avenue and 62nd was like a De Niro row for a month or two there.
Oh, sure. Well, that, you know, he, with... you know, all the movies that he had done with Martin Scorsese and everything back then, and then The Godfather 2, and then, you know, of course, Bang the Drum Slowly. I really enjoyed that movie, even though it was, you know, ended up being a pretty sad movie at the end.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's got a lot of laughs in it.
It sure does. And you had a lot of big names in that movie. I remember seeing, you know, Phil Foster, who, you know, we know from Laverne and Shirley, amongst other things, but he had a part in it, one of the coaches.
And Vince Gardini was a big name in the New York theater, but not in movies, but he was nominated for it, and I thought was wonderful as the manager.
Yes. And Vince Gardini, he had a really long and successful career, too. You know, a lot of people remember him as Frank Lorenzo from All in the Family. But he also, you'd seen him in a lot of other things over the years. I think I'd seen him in something with Joe Pesci.
Was he in Moonstruck?
Oh.
I think he was, yeah.
That's a good question. I think there was a movie called The Landlord that he was in with Joe Pesci.
Uh-huh.
Or something like that in the 90s at one point. Yeah. When Joe Pesci's career was kind of, when he was in everything, you know, I think he was in that, and then, you know, of course, we remember Frank Lorenzo, and then, you know, he was a, you know, a good character actor that showed up a lot on TV in different roles over the years, too. Some of the other, of course, we saw Barton in there again, ended up coming into the movie, like, later into the movie he came in, and then Michael Moriarty, and Danny Aiello.
Yeah, sure, Danny.
Yep. You worked with him a good bit, too, didn't you?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I did two episodics. I wanted him in Weeds, but he was too grand to be in Weeds by then.
Right.
I did a couple episodic shows with him.
Oh, okay.
And he had something awful called Della Ventura that I did an episode of.
Right. I'd seen something like that. It looked like he was one of the main characters in it, too.
His series, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But he's, you know, he went on to have a lot of great stuff, too, over the years. Just a great career and everything. And
a wonderful guy.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard a number of people interviewed that had worked with him and said he was just great. You know, that's an important part, too, whenever you have a production. You hear about, like, whenever you talk about a sports team, you know, like good dugout guy or, you know, good locker room guys, you know, good people to have around kind of behind the scenes as well as on the playing field, you know, and he seems like he was one of those.
Have people that want to do it and get along. Otherwise, you don't want to go to the set, you know?
Sure. Yeah, whenever there's, and it really only takes one person to be the cancer, which kind of ends up just, you know, that negative, energy and the, the negative energy and just the whole, you know, it just really pulls the whole thing down, I think. So, having somebody like that around is just wonderful.
In the case of Bang Van Olufsen, the person who was the cancer was, Maurice Rosenfield, who had called me up and had the money to do it and was the named the producer. Mm-hmm. But he was so crazy and so difficult that it made everybody else get along.
Right. Wow.
It was so isolated in him that the madness that, it's possible without Maury, De Niro and Moriarty might have been at each other's throat, you know?
Right.
But there was no room for anybody else to be crazy and quarrel and...
Yeah. I mean, overall back then, you know, how was Robert De Niro to work with in those days?
Wonderful. He was a thrill. He was easy and nice, and we had a great time.
Yeah. He has just done so many great things over the years, and, you know, I mean...
Yeah. He got to be more difficult, but then he was easy. He was wonderful then.
Sure. Well, wonderful. Well, I tell you what, you know, we've got to take a short break here for some promos. Mr. Hancock, it's been wonderful to speak with you so far. Stick around with us between the break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to John D. Hancock, director on Foul Players Radio, and we'll be right back after these words.
Hey everybody, it's John Orlando from the PBD Cast. Are you wondering where you can find my podcast? Well, it's real simple. Just go over to pbdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or it's available through all of those major podcasting platforms. Just search for it in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio app. And don't forget that every single Monday night at 8 o'clock, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode of the PBD Cast through the Facebook page. Just go over to Facebook.com and search for @PBDcast and join me every Monday night at 8 p.m. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I'll chat at each and every one of you later.
Howdy, it's Matt Gwynn here. Popping in to let you know about the adventures of the albino rhino. It's a show Frank the Giraffe here, my co-host James Godwin, and myself put on for you guys twice a week. Every Wednesday we talk to a comedian, and every Friday we call it Freak Yeah Friday. The show itself is not safe for work, and that freak is definitely a different word. I just don't know what podcast you're going to be listening to this promo on. And I don't want to, start screaming explicatives while you're sitting in your office. If you're lucky enough to have been able to go back to the work that you did before inside of an office or whatever, you know. But we go on an adventure twice a week, and it's a good time because we get to sit down and talk to some really cool people. And I enjoy it because, you know, I'm just curious little albino who likes to get to know folks, you know? You can find us a couple ways. Actually, multiple ways, really. Man, there's a lot of different ways to find us. You can find us through our central hub, which is www.albinorhino.me. It's the website you can find me on. And then, you know, the podcast, you can find the videos on YouTube. Search for Adventures of the Albino Rhino, also linkable from our website. You can also find us through Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Radio Public, and Spotify. That's right. We're on the same place Joe Rogan is. Granted, we're not the Joe Rogan Experience, but you know what I mean? We're there. So give us a listen. Promise you won't be dissatisfied. And enjoy your day.
What is going on, minions? Mike here for Misery Point Radio, and you're listening to the Coast to Coast Power Hour on the SJ Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, what the F is a Coast to Coast Power Hour? Well, my uneducated and uninformed friend, the Coast to Coast Power Hour is a Borg-like collective of epic podcasters from epic podcasts that have all come together to discuss the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, random awesomeness, stuff like that. Trust me, you need this in your life. For more information on this show and all the shows on the Coast to Coast Power Hour, as well as on the SJ Network, reach out to publicist Steve Joyner at www.s-j-network.com or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. No need to thank me. I'm just out here, you know, changing lives.
What's Your Effin' Binge is a podcast brought to you by Chris, Anchor, and Spotify. And what we talk to our guest about is what they're currently binge-watching on TV. And what we do is we like to take a different approach. I don't want to know what the name of the show is that they're going to talk about before they come on. I have to actually guess it. So I ask them who, what, when, where, why, and try to figure out what it is that they're watching. A lot of times I'm able to guess it. And sometimes I'm not, and that's fine. That adds to the comedy of the show. We like to bring our guest on, whether they're a model or an actress or a producer or musician, and just let them have a platform to be able to tell everybody what they have coming up next, and also entertain everybody with what's worth watching. So I hope everybody tunes in for the next episode of What's Your Effin' Binge. Thanks. It's Chris.
And we're back with John D. Hancock, and thank you for sticking with us through the break.
Sure.
So, I've had a great time talking to you. I mean, there's so many of these movies of yours, you know, that I've seen over the years, and it's just really interesting getting your kind of behind-the-scenes perspective on these things and some stories behind what went on there. And so I was looking through two, and I was... noticed, that you another part of your resume here is California Dreaming. That's the one that was made in the late 70s, and actually your wife was in it too.
Yep. Seymour Cassell, Dorothy, Glynis O'Connor, Ned Wynn, who was in it, who also wrote it.
Right.
And Tanya Roberts, who went on to be, Sheena of the Jungle or whatever.
Yes. And she, I remember seeing her in a lot of movies in that era. I'd say, late 70s through the mid to late 80s, quite a few movies with her. And then you also had the actor, and his name escapes me. He played the son-in-law on the Paul Lynn show. He was the tall surfer fella.
John Calvin?
Yes. Yeah, John Calvin.
Yeah.
And then you had Mike Van Patten. Was that one of Dick Van Patten's sons?
Yeah, Jimmy Van Patten.
Right, okay.
I was very fond of him. I thought he was very good, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought everybody was good in that movie. I'd seen it, and I remember that. You also had...
Glynis O'Connor, who...
Yes.
I did Baby Blue Marine with her, and she'd been in a whole bunch of movies. She was kind of a star.
Yeah, she was. Also, Ode to Billy Joe is what I remembered her from, too. So, yeah, that was done in 79, and that was really funny. And it had your two, your two old friends, Bart and Hyman and Marshall Efron in there. They welded him into a race car, and he couldn't get out for a month. And yeah. He's driving around getting advertising on his car, and they're slipping him beers and things like that. It was really funny.
It's not my favorite picture. I lost control of it in the editing room. So.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it's the one picture where I didn't control the editing through the mix.
Oh, okay. Okay.
A bitter experience on that part, but there are things in it that I like. And the photographer, I think Bobby Byrne was the DP, and he did a wonderful job making Tanya look great, which she certainly did.
Sure. And then after, not too long after that, a number of years later, Weeds with Nick Nolte, and you know, quite a few good people you had in that cast, too.
Yeah, Joe Mantegna and Ernie Hudson, yeah.
Ernie Hudson and...
Bill Forsyth,
yes. That took place in a prison, and I enjoyed watching that. You know how the play changed as they were going along. You know, he kind of wrote it one way, and then you know the thing evolved and everything. And
summer group, right?
Yeah.
Well, you see a lot of movies.
I do. You know, quite a few over the years. And the other person that was in that movie who I'd seen in a lot of things, Anne Ramsey.
Oh yeah, she was wonderful.
She's been in a lot of things over the years too, and she came in
the train and all that.
She played Nick Nolte's mother in that. What was she like to work with? I mean, because she's had a pretty long and good career too.
She was wonderful.
Yep. How about you had mentioned Joe Mantegna was in it, and he came in actually. I remember his character kind of came in. He actually wasn't a prisoner. He was actually an actor.
He was one of their cast members in an automobile accident, so they got a New York actor to come out and pretend to be a prisoner.
Right.
And vet a rap sheet for him for the Q&As. It's a very funny. That was the part that we kind of thought Danny might play.
Oh, okay.
But he had become a star and didn't want to play supporting roles.
Sure. Well, Joe
was great. Joe was wonderful in it.
Yeah. Because I can actually remember them trying to think of what he did to get into prison. And one of them was like, small-time mafia guy? How about that one? You know? And then...
homosexual incest?
Yeah. That was great. You know, just... that was a good movie. I can... You know, I definitely remember watching that one. Looking back here, I wanted to ask you a couple more things here. You had some TV credits and some shows that I liked over the years. And what I wanted to ask you about, it looks like you had directed...
Blues and Twilight Zone, so yeah.
Yeah, the Twilight Zone. Now, that was the 80s version of it. The remake of it and everything.
Yeah.
And what was it like working on that? Looks like he had 5 episodes in 85 and 86.
Well, I enjoyed those very much. I liked the people that I was working with. I liked the executive producer who put the whole thing together, Phil Daguerre, mm-hmm. I was very fond of. And the producers that I, Harvey Friend, and I liked the people I was working with. Uh-huh. Liked the DP, and I had 2 of the best ADs I've ever had. It was a nice show to work on. It really was.
It
didn't interfere with you, and everybody didn't hate each other.
Sure. Well, that's in some cases that ends up being a real blessing, you know. And I've experienced that myself over the years. You know, I'm a good part of my career. I played in bands. And I know how that goes, you know, in that environment, you know. Oh, boy. So also, too, you know, Hill Street Blues, it looks like you had a couple of episodes of that you directed.
Doing those a lot. I thought the actors were good. Daniel Travanti was very difficult. But other than that, the actors were wonderful. And the scripts were good. I enjoyed it. They were a lot of work. They were long hours.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of scenes that took place in different places, and there was a certain amount of shooting on the streets in downtown LA that was, you're constantly being heckled by street people. And
one of the wonderful things about shooting on location, huh?
But I enjoyed those. I liked the movies, and I like the style they were done in, the kind of, you know, doing things as one shot, like a documentary. I thought was, I really learned how to cover things in one shot.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that's, I guess there's a lot of different techniques and things that you learn over the years while you're doing this, and a lot of tricks of the trade and everything to kind of make things go a little easier.
Not on that show, I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. How about, so you, the episodes that you worked on here, and I mean, there were so many great people on that show. Did you work with Betty Thomas at all?
Oh yeah. I was crazy for her.
Yeah.
And then she became a good director too. So
yes. Yes. She's got a pretty impressive
Stern movie. That was hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a pretty impressive body of work, and she did do a nice job on Private Parts.
Yeah.
She sure did. And then how about Dennis Franz? He's a trip, isn't he?
Oh, loved him. Loved him.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
It was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. I did a show, a Hill Street, where Dennis Franz was going around with a dope-sniffing turkey. He would say, oh, my turkey detects that you have dope on you. And it was, they were, had good writers on that show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's good. Well, you know, that it's always good to have something good to work with, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes when you get there and it's kind of slim pickings, you really got to kind of work at it and everything. But so I see that you had also done some commentary. There was a version of Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Recently I did a commentary on that and one on California Dreaming.
Oh, okay. Well, that's got to be interesting. That's got to be a lot of fun. And I'm sure a lot of people that are fans of those movies were very interested to check it out. I guess to kind of hear about the whole process and everything.
Well, Let's Scare Jessica has so many fans. I mean, it's like a cult phenomenon. They fly me to Toronto or Denver or something and have a show, and everybody shows up in costume. And
It's something that when people really, and the thing is, when people do this, they don't leave any details out of it when they do things like that, you know?
Oh, and there are people that have tracked down every location on Jessica and send me pictures of it, and, you know, mm-hmm. looks now. And I mean, it's the people that take their vacation to go and hang around those locations.
Mm-hmm. Now, where was that film?
It was in Connecticut. It was East Haddam, Connecticut. I think the motel we stayed in was in Old Saybrook, very nice on the water, but it was Chester, Essex, Connecticut, very, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that because sometimes, like some projects I was on that were filmed in upstate New York, all of a sudden that was West Virginia. Right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it's rural, it could be anywhere in the country, really, you know.
An apple orchard, and we needed, you know, a pond, a lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, so coming up here, is there anything, you have any projects right now in the mill? I mean, I know you had mentioned a couple of things earlier. Do you have anything else, you know, coming out that you'd like to announce to our listeners?
Well, I have three scripts I'm anxious to do. One of them is a very strange version of Midsummer Night's Dream. Mm-hmm. Another one is about, is called South by Southeast. And it's about idealistic bank robbers with families. Mm-hmm. And it's on a kind of strange downward spiral. And then the third one is set in New York, and I don't really want to talk about the plot, but it's very scary.
Oh, okay.
It's called A Love Story.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, good.
It's a strange love story, but
yeah. Well, great.
But so I have those three things, and I'm waiting for a vaccine, you know.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? You know, yeah, it just seems like, as soon as we can get through this mess, I really think things are going to come back with a vengeance. I think not only are, you know, the studios and the people that are producing entertainment are just dying to get out there and, you know, put some product out there for people to see, I think that people want to get out and see some things and be entertained. Do you agree?
Yeah, but they don't want to get sick, so it's kind of a nuts, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, outside, you know,
there's a vaccine, people will return in droves.
Oh, yeah. That's what I really think, too. Once the vaccine is, and once things are, you know, safe to be back out there, I really think things are going to come back like crazy. And I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of work for all of us that are in the entertainment business here. So, Mr. John Hancock, I really appreciate you spending the time with us this evening. And I've really enjoyed talking to you about these projects and, you know, telling us your stories.
Watch The Girls of Summer and review it on Amazon and IMDb and, you know, rate it. Because that will help us get more people to see it.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, thanks again. And appreciate it. You know, The Girls of Summer on Amazon. And again, there's some of your other movies on there as well that can be seen and rented. So make sure you check those out too. So John Hancock, thank you for being with us this evening. And thank you all for listening. You've heard John D. Hancock here on Foul Players Radio. And we will see you next time.
This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.